This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. A headline on a recent story in Politico.com reads, "Blacks, whites hear Obama differently." The reporter observed that President Obama uses coded language, mannerisms, and symbols that resonate with blacks but may be missed by whites. For example, when the then-president-elect visited Ben's Chili Bowl, a well-known restaurant here in Washington, D.C., after lunch, the cashier asked Mr. Obama if he wanted his change. Interestingly, the pool reporter who covered that visit had quoted the president-elect as saying, "No, we're straight." Not quite the same. Today, one of our regular conversations with Dawn Turner Trice, who writes the Exploring Race column for the Chicago Tribune on coded language. Do you remember an example of a politician using different language to address different racial, ethnic, or gender groups? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. And there's a conversation underway at our website. Just go to npr.org and click on Talk of the Nation. Dawn Turner Trice with us from the studios of Chicago Public Radio. Nice to have you back.
Thank you, Neil.
And this is hardly the only example of the new president, you should excuse the expression, getting down.
No. Well, as we know, language is currency, and we often use it as a way to suit our purposes. And he often, he does this when he attends churches, he may adopt more of a southern dialect, maybe that that ministerial sound. And no, he's very well-versed in going between the worlds. And that's something that's very important, and not just in minority communities, but in general.
In general, in a lot of different communities, and we'll talk about other politicians and other bases later. But nevertheless, as you suggest, the president, in his acceptance speech, huge crowd there in Chicago the night he got the nomination, a huge crowd in Chicago the night he won the election.
Yes.
And his cadences were, in a way, he could reference Martin Luther King with just the cadences of his address.
Absolutely, and this is a president, a person who really knows how to speak to various people, and he can talk to one crowd, and everybody will take something away from it. People will hear something differently, or something will resonate in a very different way. And it's part of that is the speech itself and the messages that are interwoven into the speech. But a lot of it is also cadence and maybe body language. And he's very good at it. I've never really experienced a speaker in whom my readers will say that they heard the same speech and they walked away with something different.
Could you give us an example?
One of the things that I kept hearing on the night of the election was when Obama talked about he referenced Martin Luther King and getting to the promised land or the mountaintop. And there were white readers who said that they got that meaning, they got that reference to King, but there were black readers who also said that it was something that they felt, I mean, they were almost teary-eyed, and it reminded them of some of the speeches that they had heard even in their churches or they had heard growing up.
And so it has greater resonance for them, even if people who weren't raised in those situations got the reference, they didn't get it the same way.
Absolutely. I mean, it meant something completely different.
And now we have examples of Michael Steele, who's, of course, the newly elected head of the Republican National Committee. Michael Steele talking about bling-bling and off-the-hook programs.
And exactly. And what he's doing as well, I mean, they are finding various ways to connect. And as I said, language is currency. And Michael Steele is an African-American man, the first black chairman of the Republican National Committee. And what he's trying to do is he's trying to connect with a group that has not always cottoned, if you will, too much to the Republican Party. So one of the things that he's doing by using that language is saying, kind of that Clinton-esque, I feel your pain. I can relate to you. And even though our ideologies or our philosophies may be a little different, listen to me because I can speak your language.
Well, we want listeners to weigh in on this. Examples of other politicians using coded language to address to their base, and also, should you use different language among different people? 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. Craig is with us. Craig calling from Sunrise in Florida.
Hey, how you doing, Neil? Great show.
Thank you.
Listen to you every day.
Well, thank you for that.
I'd just like to say I'm of Jamaican descent, but my family is very mixed, so my complexion is like Barack's. And it all depends on who I'm addressing, how I speak, because mm-hmm. I was actually grew up in New York and South Florida. I mean, if it's Ebonics that's necessary, that's what I speak. I, as a matter of fact, I had a trucking company, and when you're out in the country, in this great country of ours, you know, a lot of times I'd have to put on a country accent in order mm-hmm. to get a response from the other truckers if I want a truthful response. I mean, if you have a black accent in some places in this country, other truckers will give you misdirection at times,
absolutely.
Believe it or not.
Right.
So basically, it all depends on who I'm speaking with, what kind of dialect I actually use.
And will there be times when that Jamaican lilt will get back into your voice?
Well, of course. When I'm with my parents or with friends, it's entirely there, you know.
Don Turner Trice, you write about in your response to that Politico piece, and by the way, you can there's a link to the Politico piece at our website. Just go to npr.org/talk. You write about how you grew up bilingual, as you
yes.
put it.
Yes, because I lived in a house where my mother stressed proper English, and you had to use words in a certain way and use them correctly. I said that if we asked my mother, you know, Mom, where's my coat at? And she would often say, in front of the preposition. But I also lived in a house where my father was the type of person who believed that language needed to kind of be a little more flexible depending on the group to whom you were speaking. So,
funny enough, my sister and I used to play with my mother and speak phonics
yes.
to each other, like, hey, what's going on, dog? And she'd be like, do not speak
right.
like that in my house.
That's
and
exactly
she wouldn't
right.
let us speak, you know, patois either, which is our Jamaican dialect. So we'd always mess with her, wagwan, mommy, and she'd be like, do not speak like that in my house. I'm raising you to speak properly.
Right.
So and I think it's a benefit because yeah. a lot of times I will see I'm not going to say shock, but, you know, a little confusion in people's faces when they actually meet me and they're like, oh, man, you know, you sound totally different over the phone. And I've lived places where people actually ask me, where are you from? Because they have right. no idea from my dialect.
Well, where. Craig, I grew up in New Jersey, and my mother grew up in Jersey City. And every time my voice seemed to approximate a Jersey accent, a mysterious red welt the size of my mother's hand would raise on the
appear.
Side of my face. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So,
well, anyways, I'm glad I got to talk with you. You guys have a great program.
All right. Thanks very much, Craig. Appreciate it. Here's an email from Michael. Al Gore did this, too. The first mm-hmm. time I heard Gore speak at a black church made me do a double take.
Absolutely.
Al Gore from Tennessee, though, raised in Washington, D.C. largely, but nevertheless originally from Tennessee, but nevertheless speaking to a different audience. And the piece in Politico.com talked about how George W. Bush would often use not only the syntax, but the not only the cadence, but mm-hmm. terminology familiar to evangelical Christians that would make them feel reassured about him.
Absolutely. And this politicians are pretty adept at doing this. The Southern accent is so much akin to black slang. I mean, there's a lot of that interwoven into it. And so you do hear preachers, whether they're in the North or the South, they tend to have a Southern cadence. And when politicians go to churches, whether those churches are in the North or the South or West, wherever they are, you can hear them kind of try to sound like the ministers. And sometimes it is a little, you know, it's almost like a ringing in the ear a bit, but not always. But the George Bush often spoke to used language to speak to evangelical crowds, and Ronald Reagan did the same thing to various crowds, and so that is something that's fairly prevalent. But I think that what Obama, what makes his a little different is the racial overtones with him, because there was a point at which there was a question regarding whether Obama was black enough.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly now, I guess that is no longer a question. But there was, I think, this outreach that he needed to do in order to reach the black community. And part of that was with language, especially being Harvard educated. educated. One of the things that's very, very important is it's kind of, you know, you're told when you go to college that, you know, don't forget where you came from. And so it's that understanding, you know, how to pivot between worlds and be very successful at doing it and come off as being pretty genuine as well. That's also important.
And it's not just addressing necessarily African-American audiences.
Absolutely.
Because of the rise of hip-hop and other forms. This is a generational thing. If you're going to talk to young people, a lot of that terminology, that cadence, well, that's how they speak too.
That's right. And that's what Michael Steele is trying. He said to the Washington Times newspaper that he's trying to take the Republican message to the hip-hop crowd. And one of the ways to do that is to speak in their language.
Here's an email from Elizabeth. This is not a habit of politicians only. My mother always said it was okay to speak that way with my friends, but around my parents, grandparents, and then friends, I was to speak the King's English. I swore I'd never put my kids through that, but I admit I have in the end. So.
I tell you, my daughter knows how to get to me. You know, she will say something that's a little slang-like, and she knows how to get a response out of her mother. She does it very well.
Let's talk to John. John with us from Grand Rapids in Michigan.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for having me on.
Go ahead, please.
I grew up in the UP of Michigan.
The Upper Peninsula.
My parents were actually very educated, both of them, and they've actually been dubbed kind of grammar Nazis. And what I've found is that depending on the group, it just kind of builds on some of the other callers, but depending, especially my friends, I have a lot of small-town friends, and I feel that sometimes I need to speak more, use larger words, more educated language with some groups, and then kind of dumb down my language with others, so that not to be judged. And
do you see it as dumbing down, or just using a different vernacular?
Well, kind of both, actually.
Yeah.
So, well, yeah, that's my comment.
Yeah. All right. Thanks very much.
You know,
thank you.
As I said, that there was a difference between the way that my mother and my father approached language. And my father would never have said dumbing down. I mean, his idea is that you communicate. If the goal is to communicate, you use the language that is most effective. And in whatever case, if you're talking to people who may not be as well educated in the book sense, because his philosophy, again, was that people are smart, they just may not have, you know, college degrees, then you have to talk to them in a language in which they can hear you, because it's not enough for them to hear the words. You want to convey a message.
And may have been educated in a lot of things university professors may know nothing about.
Absolutely.
We're talking with Dawn Turner Trice of the Chicago Tribune about, talking differently to different people. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get Crystal on the line. Crystal's with us from Cincinnati.
Hi. I remember on the campaign trail, there was this, like, cringeworthy moment that Mike Huckabee had where he was out in an African-American community and he picked up a baby that had a chain on and he said, "Oh, look at you. You've got some bling bling on." And I guess he was really trying to connect with some of the African-American people out there. And bizarrely, as they were taking a picture, he started to say, you know, "Who let the dogs out?"
Whoop, whoop.
It was just mortifying, one of the most bizarre moments ever.
And that raises the risk of speaking differently to different crowds. If you get it wrong, boy, can you sound absolutely awful.
Absolutely. And on some level, I thought it was, like, completely insulting and very patronizing that he would, like, reach out to this community who, in this, like, just, I mean, really talk about dumbing down, you know?
Well, I mean, we mentioned earlier the whole notion of being genuine, and that is what I think really resonates with people. And I think that there was a point during the campaign as well as someone tried to use the phrase "baby mama," referring to baby Obama, baby mama, referring to Michelle Obama, and it really kind of spoke to there isn't a lot of people just aren't comfortable using the language, or they may not understand all of the nuances behind the language, right? Because baby mama is kind of, it's not a nice, it's more of a pejorative. It's not a nicer term. And so to kind of not know some of the nuances behind the language, you really can be stepping stepping through a minefield.
And isn't this also what we were talking about in all the misunderstandings about the fist dap?
Yes, absolutely.
Crystal, thanks very much for the phone call.
Thank you.
Here's an email from Michael in Jacksonville, Florida. Again, politicians not the only category of people who change the way they talk depending on the environment. As a professional black male, I speak differently when I'm at a conference with my father, with my family, with my coworkers, with whites, my wife. This is normal and not an issue. And, well, I guess that leads to some degree of, you know, how schizophrenic are we that we have to speak differently to all these different peoples?
Well, I like the phrase bilingual. Or multilingual, because it is, you know, again, if the goal is to be heard, then you have to adapt a bit. And I think it's nice to be able to speak in various languages, to talk to various people. I've never heard Condoleezza Rice, for example, you know, say something like, "You go, girl," or maybe, you know, I mean,
it's hard to imagine.
It is hard to imagine. But I do think that one of the things that Barack brings to the table, and it's consistent with a lot of people who straddle several different worlds, is that there's this comfort in being able to speak to people. And if you do that, and it doesn't matter, you know, whether the people come from Harvard or if they're in a rural community or if they're in the inner city, the goal is to be heard and to say something of substance.
Let's get Leslie on the line. Leslie with us from West Bloomfield in Michigan.
Yes, at my house, Yiddishisms tend to get in rather frequently, even though we're told to speak proper English. And as a result, when I'm out in the world, they tend to drop into my language very easily. And then I have to translate. And Mensch is one most people know, but the one that always gets me in trouble is chutzpah.
And you need a lot of it to use the word.
Yeah, but most people don't understand what it is.
Well, go to New York.
But I think
New Yorkers don't know.
But I think it's a great opportunity to explain, you know, and it's colorful language, and I love reading novels or books in which you have some of that language kind of sprinkled through. It educates us all.
Yeah, that's true. But then you get people who, if they hear it on TV, come up to you and say, "Leslie, what's chutzpah?"
or "Happy Yom Kippur."
That's another one. Or why are you not going to be at work tomorrow? I think my favorite story is that I had started a new job, and it was, you know, Rosh Hashanah, then Yom Kippur and Sukkot, and then Hanukkah came around, and I walked into work, and this person who had never really dealt with Jews before go, "Why are you here?" I work here, don't I? Or last I knew I did.
Well, better check on that, Leslie. Thanks very much for the phone call. We appreciate it. We're talking with Dawn Turner-Trice. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Oh, my pleasure.
Dawn Turner-Trice writes Exploring Race for the Chicago Tribune, with us from Chicago Public Radio. Tomorrow, Ken Rudin, the political junkie, returns, and we unveil the official No Prize prize. Stay tuned for that. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.